There's no focus for it. It's just a horrible feeling of dread. I don't know if other people would think it's horrible. Maybe they've felt lots worse. But it's new to me. I've never felt that way before. And like I say, if I felt this wasn't important and I could walk away from it, I would. Because it really complicates my life. And I don't want to complicate my life. D, I thought the other things we worked on years ago might have complicated it. You know, when we were working on the past lives, Andy U started channeling about the seeding of Earth. P, no, that didn't complicate it at all. In fact, that was separate. That seemed to be an addition to my life. But this is directly in my life. It's not something that's separate. It's coming through a different channel, so to say, or something. D, yes. The past lives, even though they are strange, don't affect you directly. P, it's removed. D, yes, this is related to this life, something that's been happening to you now. That would make a difference, wouldn't it? P, yeah, you know, that first time we worked on this and I saw the little creatures in the road, I remember the feeling of, I don't want to change my reality. I don't want this to happen. I resisted it because it was changing my concept of reality and my foundations. It feels like part of what's happening now is that again my reality foundations are being challenged. The things that I have taken for granted and drawn so much strength from, basing my perceptions of what is and isn't reality, is being, frankly, shot to hell. I was genuinely worried that if Phil was confronted by something of this magnitude that he could not handle, I feared that the suicidal, losing touch with reality, 251, tendencies might return. He had adjusted and coped admirably since that time of decision in the 1970s, but what would happen if this newfound information threatened to overwhelm him? I didn't want to convey these fears to him. It would surely only add to the complicated emotions he was feeling. D, I don't want to hurt you in any way. P, no, I know you don't, and like I say, if this was something that was insignificant, I would rather walk away from it. But I can't. There's a responsibility here, not only to myself, but there's a larger responsibility to something or someone else. I feel that I have to do this. It's something that I can't close off. I can't forget about it. D, you know, after that first session you were disturbed. And I thought maybe wanted to just drop it right the butt. A few days later, you said, well, I want to go on with it. I thought if it bothered you that much, we wouldn't have to explore it. P, the feelings are not something that I can't handle. It complicates my life, and it makes it unpleasant for a while. But even so, it's important to me, for some reason, to get this out. It's not something that I relish doing, but it's something that I feel very strongly that I have to do. I don't have any clear vision of why, or what's going to come of it. So it's important to continue this. D, okay. Because if it's bothering you, we can always drop it. We don't have to do it. P, I understand that, and I appreciate that. I just wanted you to be aware. A couple of times I postponed calling you and setting up another session because I felt he had to walk away from it for a while. D, that's why I let you call the shots. I never want to push you into something you don't want to do. But is there any way you can push this to the back of your mind and pretend it's a dream so it doesn't bother you? P, no. It's important that I do get this out. It's a blockage of sorts. There's this disturbance inside that needs to be vented and released. I guess that's why it's important, on a personal level, that I continue. D, maybe if you didn't release it, it would act on you subconsciously in some way. P, exactly. I feel as though the conscious and subconscious are battling over this, and trying to adjust my perception of reality. 252, the keepers of the garden, it's in the subconscious and it needs to be released through the conscious. It's like grafting a burn. When they scrap the burn, it's horrible and it's painful, but it's what has to be done to promote the healing. Do you know what I'm talking about? D, I don't know a lot about it, but I get the idea. P, that's a horrible process when people are severely burned. They have to scrape the dead skin off occasionally to prevent scarring, or something. I'm not exactly sure what they do, but it's along those lines. That's how I see this, as a disturbance inside that has to be released and vented. It has to come through. It has to be expressed. That's part of the process. As it's being released, it will cause these feelings, but then it always passes. I've got a strong constitution. I can handle it. It's not going to cause any permanent problems. It just wanted you to know that if I said I wasn't feeling well or something, or if it was disturbing me, you would understand why. I needed to tell you so you would be aware of what was going on. D, but anyway, you said you thought Io could handle it better now than you could a couple of years ago when Wefist started working on these past lives. It could have come out then. P, I wouldn't have wanted to even try to deal with it back then. It's hard to describe. I don't know why it's so upsetting. But the knowledge of all that stuff that we worked with before in the channeling, and being familiar with other entities and aliens and so forth, is good background to be able to handle this. It was preparation to deal with this. I say my constitution is really strong, but yet at the same time the human psyche is very fragile. D. Oh, yes, that's why you have to be careful, but usually the subconscious forward that's going to harm. It's won't allow you to bring anything very protective. That's probably why it's kept it hidden all this time. P. Yes, exactly. But yet there is the growth factor. You have to grow. You have to heal. And there's a compromise there in comfort versus healing. Not all healing is necessarily comfortable, but the priority would be the healing over the relatively minor discomfort. So it's something that I have got to continue with until. I don't know. I don't know what it's going to lead to. D. Yes, I thought we were finished last week, but apparently there are still some more to be explored. P. I have a good sense of when to cut something off, or what to explore. Not so much consciously, but I guess my subconscious, losing touch with reality, 253, or someone on the other side, perhaps, is directing what needs to come out and what doesn't. D. Yes, I think your subconscious will shut it off if it thinks you can't handle it. That's the way it works. Otherwise the memories wouldn't have been stirred up in their first place. P. There's a definite mechanism at work here that is directing what comes out, and when and how and why. Apparently it's time, and so here we are. We find ourselves doing exactly what we're supposed to be doing, I suppose. D. But it when you were around those beings you said you felt love for them. P. Exactly. There's a contradiction there, because when it's actually happening in the dreams or in the recall, it seems that it's not scary and it's not frightening. There is no feeling of dread. It's like the experiences go directly into the psyche or something. If I'm interpreting this right, if I understand this correctly, these feelings of dread are the conscious mind trying to deal with this. It's like the conscious mind is a little, not just a little but very, immature. And then the conscious mind has to be subdued or something in order to experience that. It's such a powerful experience during the visitation. I don't like the term abduction. D. No, I don't either. P. So it's like the conscious mind is somehow squelched, and the experience is going directly into. I don't know if the subconscious would be accurate or what level it is. D. Memory bank or whatever. I can understand that. And then all of a sudden when their conscious sees it, it says, hey, something really happened here. And it begins to get frightened. P. That's one of the things right there. Did it happen? That's one of the feelings of losing grip, losing touch with reality, is that feeling of, did this really happen? Now, wait a minute, you're going crazy. You're making this up. D. That sounds like the conscious mind. This would be a feeling of, if these things happen, why couldn't I control it? It couldn't handle it at the time, and now it's probably trying to push it back. P. I think it is the conscious mind trying to deal with something that's far beyond its comprehension. This is so new on a conscious level. I think that's why it's important to continue. Because my conscious mind is learning from this and growing in self-stituent awareness. The important thing is not to let the conscious mind just rationalize it away, but to actually come to terms. 254. The keepers of the garden, with it, that is what I have to continue with. to allow my conscious mind to actually grip this situation. D. You could accept it and deal with it as you would any traumatic and unpleasant event in your life. Maybe this is part of the reason why the average person doesn't to try to remember some of these things, because they don't know if they'll be able to handle it or not. P. It's surprising how immature the conscious mind really is. It's infantile. Sometimes as Phil tried to rationalize the events he said, he kept getting the impression of a stern and demanding father or parent figure, and that somehow by revealing these things, he was risking punishment or chastisement from the parent. The hidden feeling of doing something you weren't supposed to, and that the stern father would be angry if he found out about it. The small child in defiance of the father. I felt it was very good therapy for Phil to analyze what he perceived was happening to him. If he could talk about it and try to understand it, maybe he would find a way to live with it without it disturbing his normal life. This lifetime is the most important, after all, and the subject has to learn to integrate any information they receive into their normal routine. They have to learn to treat it as an interesting curiosity and apply it, but not to let it take over to the point that their life is disrupted. When a subject desires to explore their past lifetimes or these UFO experiences, most of the time they are subconsciously ready to accept and understand what comes out, strange though it may be. But occasionally there is one who has more difficulty. It is possible Phil had more trouble because of his star child lineage. He didn't have the subconscious grounding given by several Earth lives to help him understand these strange and confusing human emotions that were plaguing him. As he said, he would have to work through it by himself, and he felt he would be able to do that. During the past month, Phil had had a few more strange dreams. He could not remember the particulars about them, but he saw a gun-like instrument, like the stock of a rifle, with a tiny coiled wire on the end of it. He knew they somehow inserted this wire into the tear duct in the corner of his right eye. When they removed it, he saw a little bit of blood on the tip of the wire. He had the feeling something, losing touch with reality, 255, was inserted that may be similar to the device that was placed in his back. In another fragment of a dream, Phil was again in an examining room, similar to a doctor's office. He remembered a lot of white and knew that the room was very sterile. Then someone stuck a long steel probe in his chest just above his left breast. It went into the skin, but he didn't remember feeling anything. He didn't know if they were putting something in or pulling something out. Phil then discovered he was not alone in the room. He saw another young man about his age who was almost hysterical in anticipation of the procedure being performed on him. The man thought it was going to hurt, and Phil watched his face to see his reaction as the probe entered his chest. The young man calmed down and his expression was almost one of pleasure instead of pain or fear. Phil thought maybe they had suggested to him that it would feel good to calm him down. This dream left Phil puzzled. Then Phil raised his shirt and we examined the area on his chest again. There was no mark or any indication that anything had been done to him. Were these only dreams or snatches of real memories? Apparently many physical things were done during the examinations and testings on the craft. The paradox was that although his subconscious was releasing bits and pieces through dreams, it was also blocking our access to more information. Denial of access started the session. I had planned to explore the dream about the metal probe being inserted into his breast. I also wanted to trace the black box back to the time he had apparently built it and left it on the ship for his future incarnation of Phil to discover. These were the objectives, but although Phil was willing, or apparently thought he was willing, to explore these things, his subconscious was not so anxious to cooperate this time. When Phil entered his familiar trance, he encountered a barrier of sorts. The entities or whoever it is that seemed to control these sessions announced that they would not allow Phil to explore any event pertaining to his present lifetime. They were aware of the turmoil his conscious mind was going through in its attempts to adjust these disclosures with his version of reality, the problems he was having trying to integrate the information into his normal everyday life. Until this conflict was resolved, it was determined that we would not be allowed to further explore these incidents. Therefore, access was denied. But they did agree to answer questions, as long as I did not approach these personal experiences. After the discussion we share your concern for the vehicle, for he is one of us. And we would not allow him to experience that which would be destructive to one who has chosen such a precarious mission. We watch with great interest for he has chosen, from our perspective, perhaps the most perilous mission one could possibly choose, and has as yet done quite well. He has literally run the risk of total loss of control. He is, at this time, on his own, so to say, cut off from what many would experience in order to guide 256, Denial of Access, 257, D, P, D, P, D, P, D, P, D, them and protect them. He, however, has chosen to go it alone to prove his devotion and loyalty to the cause, the purpose. And so we would be very protective and not allowing him to harm himself or to allow others to harm him. Yes, Andy Uno, I am always working for that aim also. That is accurate. For that is we have assisted in this endeavor, as long as you are the one that he works with, because your concern is valid and genuine. There is one thing I don't understand. Eustace alone. I thought we have our guardians, our guide East Hat Aerial was there to assist us. And that we wouldn't come back to Earth without that help. There are experiences given which tend to direct one's life. Experiences which would redirect the entity back to its original purpose. To gently steer it back onto the proper course when the path is perhaps lost. At this time, the vehicle is undergoing preparations for what we would term a shift in consciousness. To a higher, more refined level of communication with those entities and energies which he has worked with through the eons to bring help to this planet. There has been many, many preparations made to enable this exchange of awarenesses. For it is not simply a unilateral giving or a taking. It is a bilateral shifting of awareness and consciousness. A trading of places, such that the one then becomes the other. That journey is both figurative and literal, because there will be a displacement given to facilitate this change in awareness. The spiritual journey is one of a stretching of the abilities to a realm which, at least from the physical point of view, has never been attained as yet. There are, of course, many dimensions unmentioned here which will also be affected. However, it would be accurate to say that this journey is somewhat of a graduation in a sense, of all that has come before in preparation. And yet, at the same time, it is, of course, a new beginning. A new chapter. Will this affect the vehicle's life? That is accurate. On an emotional level there will be a change in awareness of, not only self, but of others. I was wondering how it would affect his day-to-day life. We would say that it would be much for the better. In one of his experiences well, too, really he was shown a small black box when he was on board one of these craft. Could you give me any information about that black box? 258, The Keepers of the Garden, p. Perhaps. It was shown to him at that time as an indication of, not only his heritage, but the direction he would soon be taking. There was, at that point, a juncture, a choice of several different options in his life. He was given this experience so that he could, in his inner planes, access and assimilate the information that would be available to him, and so choose, through his higher awareness, that which would be most appropriate to his chosen profession and responsibilities in this lifetime. This was a bringing together of that which has been accomplished with that which has yet to be accomplished. This experience with the box was simply a catalyst for this assimilation and determination. It was simply a linking of past, present and future. D. Then at the times he was shown the box he was at junctures his life? NP, that is accurate, from a particular point of view. However, not in a literal sense. D, he said the box seemed familiar to him. P, yes, the origin of the box was connected with his own origin. D, does the box contain anything? P, yes, both literally and figuratively. There is information gained or carried within the box, as well as information which is literal, and inscribed in and on the box. D, but he couldn't figure out how to open it. P, that is accurate. This is a built-in safeguard. The key is within his own mind. The key is mental and the information within the box cannot be accessed and brought into his conscious reality until he has reached the proper stage of maturity or spiritual development. D. Will he, at some time, be able to open that box? P. Yes, that is his destiny. Or part of his chosen destiny. At that point when his experience reaches the level that he can, not only understand, but assimilate the information given through the box, then it will be given. The experience is, again, one of a catalyst nature, given to verify that which has been and to illustrate that which could be again. D. He remarked one time that he thought he had made the box. P. That is accurate. D. Could he go to the time when the box was first made? P. That is not to be given. D. So we're not allowed to go to that time? P. That is accurate. D. All right, I respect that. I was wondering about it because that box is a denial of access. 259. Puzzle to me. P. It is truly and accurately a puzzle to him also. In the sense that it was not understandable to him at the time he saw it, a frame of reference is necessary, and the experiences have to be given which would allow for the complete understanding of that which has been and that which shall be. D. When that happens, he'll be ready for it. P. That is accurate. We would say that the physical appearance was of a small object, perhaps rectangular in appearance, and almost black in color. It was made of a natural element, a type of stone found in an area with which he is very familiar. D. Is it from Earth? P. That is not to be given. That is all the information you can have about the box at this time. The door had been closed on that topic. That avenue being shut off, I decided to begin my questioning about other things. D. Will I be allowed to have a general information about these extraterrestrials? P. That is accurate, as long as you do not encroach upon the volatile area of his own personal experiences. It is time for this information to be more fully drawn out and examined and understood by others. I began the questioning with two topics that were of interest to me, and which had been suggested by Phil's own experiences. D. What is the most common type of being that is visiting our Earth at this time? A physical, extraterrestrial being. I didn't want to get into discussions about energy beings or spirit entities. P. We would say that the humanoid subgroup of. We find no translatable equivalent, however, there are subgroups of the general category of humanoid. There are many which are identical to your physical bodies. The seeding which was done on your planet was of this nature. And yet there are those which are distantly related, yet very unconventional by your standards. This type, the distant cousin, is the more prevalent of the visitation type. The androids, as you call them, are simply workers who, 260, the keepers of the garden, have volunteered for this mission. They have removed themselves from the area in which they have been programmed, to volunteer their services in this accomplishment. We hesitate to use the word experiment, for the outcome is already predicted and known. However, we do not want to say mission. For the majority of the work, we find we must discontinue this line of discourse, for there is a misunderstanding arising of the intent of the direction taken. The information given has been misconstrued as aggressive and not of a helping nature. We would not wish to promote the idea that we come as conquerors, however, as helpers. D. You mentioned that the outcome was already known. What do you mean? P. The ultimate outcome. Not the individual and personal outcomes which each of you must create in your own fashion. D. What is the ultimate outcome? P. The raising of the human race to universal level of awareness. To be brothers of the star people, and not subjugates or subordinates. D. What do these creatures, the humanoids or androids, look like? P. Those which you have described as gray in appearance and small in stature are typical. The eyes, of course, are the most prominent facial feature, simply because they are the communicative receptors. D. Do their eyes function the same as human eyes? P. In a sense. They see, however, they collect much more of what you would call your visible light spectrum, also including the infrared and ultraviolet regions. D. Do their eyes have pupils and function in the same manner as ours? P. Not in the sense that they focus and capture light, In that sense they are different. They do receive, yet their methods of reception is based on a different principle involved here. D. Do their eyes have eyelids? P. Not in the sense that they cover, not as you would say yours do. D. Do they have similar respiratory systems? P. We would say they are similar only in the fact that they are used to analyze, not to digest or ventilate. D. Do these people take any form of sustenance? P. They need no physical sustenance to maintain. They are energy beings which can maintain on pure mental energy. That is sufficient. Denial of access, 261. Then they do not consume anything, like a human would? Not in that gross physical sense. Could they assimilate by osmosis? There is the assimilation. There is analyzation of compounds, and perhaps rectification of certain anomalies which may appear. However, as sustenance they derive energy more from energy sources than from digestive or respiratory functions. D. What type of energy would they live on? Do you mean like elements present in the atmosphere? D. P. D. P. P. Mental energy sustenance. D. Would they thrive on emotions? P. There is no emotional content here. These are called androids which are emotionless yet responsive to mental energy. D. I mean, would they thrive on emotions thrown out by others? P. They would be affected, however, not sustained. D. How are these creatures produced? P. This is a process assigned to the central part of the planet which holds the residence of those energies of the gubernatorial nature. An analogy being the county or perhaps state in which your political system lies. The process is a blending of energies, both physical and mental in nature, so that this physical construction is then given mental responsiveness. Not mental identity, however, a mental responsiveness which allows this physical creation to respond to mental stimulation. D. Are they cloned, manufactured in some way, or made by another individual? P. They are both, in the sense that the mental energy is given by life forces. But they are in a sense manufactured because the process is more of assembly than growth. They are elements or machinery. However, that is not to say there is not living or life force in these units. These androids are responsive to your mental energies, but yet take orders or are subservient to those who are directing that particular operation in which one would find them. They are servants. D. Are genetic experiments between humans and androids going on? P. Not so. For there is no procreation between androids. They are NCT self-sustaining in nature. They are simply creations which are, through a bonding process, given a life force which reacts with and is empathic to the life force with which they come in contact. They are not, however, procreative. 262. The keepers of the garden. D. How do androids communicate with beings on the planet Earth? P. We would like to clarify that they do not communicate with you Earthlings but with those who are their superiors. D. Who are their superiors? P. Those who are responsible for that particular mission in which there is an interaction. However, there are elements of awareness far above and beyond even that. It would be as if the masters of the universe are sending out these underlings who would participate in whatever mission is desired and then report back. It is much like your military structure. D. So the androids do not communicate with people on Earth? P. Not in the sense that there is given direction. That is to say, a human would not direct the operation. The androids do respond to human emotion, but not to the extent that they interact with the intellect. D. Do they understand human emotion? P. That is accurate. They are empathic. D. Are these beings subject to any afflictions that limit their life terms? P. There are none that we could relate. However, there are those which, in proper context, could be debilitating. None that you yourselves, however, could hope to accommodate. D. Does this mean that they have eternally? P. No, because the bodies are dissimulated after their use has expired. D. Are there any other beings on these grassed with these andmits? P. Certainly. There are many, who are different forms. However, not necessarily to say that they have to be. D. Are they creatures more like we are? Required to take sustenance, etc. P. That is accurate. D. What do the most common ones that accompany the Cenidrids look like?